The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning again. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show at 7 minutes past 10. A little later on, we're going to be reacting or have reaction to the football yesterday. Of course, it was St Unan's versus Dunloe. Dunloe trying to bridge a 60-plus year gap. Well, they did bridge that, I suppose, in reaching the final. They didn't win the last final, but unfortunately they came up short for Dunloe. Jubilations amongst St Unan's fans, of course, as they ran out winners. 16, 17 times they've won it now. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little later on in the programme. Panel to be determined. Sorry, Greg, this has to be the single hardest time I've ever listened to Highland Radio, says a listener. I'm sorry this man has lost colleagues at war, but what is happening now by both sides cannot ever be backed or commended in any way. It's something I struggle because I don't have, genuinely speaking, and it's based on just the reality of not being involved, if you know what I mean. The only thing I'm focused on really is the incredible any loss of life of innocent civilians. I'm thinking if it were me and my family or any of the listeners out there, for a cause just to be wiped off the face of the planet, I struggle regardless of who's dropping the bombs or launching the drones. Greg, you're talking rubbish. If Israel controlled the borders, how come Hamas, they've built an arsenal of weapons, release the remaining hostage is a starting point. You have a left-wing, cowardly Western ideology which will cause the destruction of the West and the peaceful way of life. Well, we also had Michael's point of view there. I'm here really to facilitate. They have destroyed families, their incomes and crops. They've shot at journalists and now UN soldiers. Is Michael listening to what he's saying about Israel? A caller points out Private Hugh Doherty was from Letterkenny and is buried in Cornwall Graveyard. Thank you for that information. I agree with everything that man just said in regards to Israel. Netanyahu will do whatever the hell he likes because the Yanks won't do a thing to stop him. They're making billions out of selling the latest military tech to Israel. Another, why are we talking about Israel-Palestine when our own country is in a mess? More importantly, will Donegal County Council have a new email for the 10% increase of people who are already on the scheme? I think it's really not who we are to sort of not talk about tens of thousands of people dying, innocent people dying in another country because of our defective concrete block issue. We talk about the defective concrete block issue all of the time, but I couldn't, in all consciousness, close my mind to what's happening around the world because of something I'm going through or I was going through. And this is another, a lot of coverage of the 50,000 plus massacred in Gaza, genocide, yet zero coverage of the deaths caused by abortion in Ireland. 50,000, they put the figure out. Total hypocrisy by the media here, don't you think? We get the messages about we get messages on both, cover both here on this program. People have different ideas between abortion and an 8-year-old kid being blown to bits in Gaza, but you clearly don't. Life is life, and I get where you're coming from. Get that man off the air trying to justify Israel's slaughter of innocents. Getting people off the air doesn't work. Whether you disagree with the senator or you disagree with Michael, getting people off the air doesn't help. We have to listen to everyone's different points of view, don't we? Michael is talking about this subject personally because he lost a friend to Hamas. Of course, Israel have a right to defend themselves, but moving into other countries to attack them is not defending themselves. But just in relation to that, what do you do if you are being attacked from just within that border? Do you just, there's 60-odd thousand Israelis have to have had moved south because of bombs and drones coming in from Lebanon. And this is not pro-Israel or anti another group. This is literally, what do you do in that situation? If your country is being attacked from just within the border for an opposing country, is there ever any justification for going in to try and take out the source of that attack? That's a question, not a statement. Let me know what you think. 086 60 25,000. Listening to this man, this man is going to get innocent Irish soldiers killed. They're not human shields. They are hidden in a bunker. This is a PR exercise for the defunct UN, which is becoming a pawn or has become a pawn for Islamic terrorist organisations. A caller asks, who rules the world? Is it Israel or is it the UN? And other Israelis, yes, have been traumatised, but so also equally have the Palestinian and Lebanese. And this is why, precisely, there are no winners in war. There are absolutely no... When the dust settles on this, and when the dust settles in Eastern Europe, and you can argue the importance of lines being drawn and victories being sought and won, battles lost. At the end of the day, at what cost? What is the human cost of this activity? Because all the while, people are dying. You should have asked Michael about the Israeli settlers in Gaza putting Palestinian people out of their homes and moving in. That's what's happening for decades. I did talk of them taking parts of that world bit by bit, and he heard his response. Hi, Greg, serving soldier here. I've been in Lebanon twice and Syria once, staying in the occupied Golan Heights. Israeli soldiers treated us Irish with such contempt in the Golan region and hated us being there. Can I just say that your last caller, Michael, is out of touch with reality? I've never heard as much pro-Israel waffle in my life. Israel lost 1,400 civilians in the horrible attack on the 7th of October. Does that give Israel the right to kill innocents? 40,000 civilians and counting in Gaza and Lebanon? Most people would say no. Some might say yes. Thank you very much for that, and I appreciate you, firstly, of course, being in the army and representing us wherever you do, but also in giving us that insight, your insight. And to be honest with you, it's clear from senior Israeli people speaking that they haven't much time for the UN peacekeepers, and they peacekeepers in inverted commas. It's very clear, and it doesn't surprise me that there is that attitude, because I don't think that opinion of UN peacekeepers was formed in the last year. It seems to me that that's been running there for quite some time. A caller says, we're supposed to be a neutral country, but we still should speak out about injustices and wrongdoings and facilitate a peaceful initiative. But we should not be using young Irish soldiers as possible human sacrifice amidst the weapons and actions of mass destruction all around them. They are not safe. Bring them home. Harris and Martin are safe themselves. They won't be in the firing line. Greg, terrible situation with Gaza and Israel. Watched a BBC documentary the other night on the attack on the kibbutz a year ago. Was awful indeed. And I think most of us could not watch the footage of that. Well, I certainly couldn't. And just last one before the break, this is as it relates to the rounding up of Ukrainians in Ukraine to be sent to the front lines of the Russia-Ukraine war. Re young Ukrainians forced to join the army, says a listener. I've spoken to Ukrainians living here who told me they've got no time for their President Zelensky and state that he is more focused on promoting war and victory against Russia than trying to promote and facilitate peace. Now, we're joined in studio by two representatives of the CDNT families. They are Gemma McGrory Fitzgerald. Gemma, good morning to you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
And also Leonard Watson. Thank you.
Morning, Greg.
Two regular individuals, again, who found themselves being right across an issue and having to raise it at the highest levels with a view to get a better services for families and better outcomes for our children too. So again, fair play to you. It's a theme continued from the end of last week. Leonard, I will start with you. Obviously, the CDNT issue has been there for a long, long time, yeah. But it really came to the fore last year, and it gained obviously a lot of local traction, national traction, and the HSC were quite responsive in relation to that. The minister had commented on it and so on and so forth. And for a period of time, there were regular meetings, weren't they? So talk to me of those meetings and any progresses that were made since this came really to the fore last year.
Yeah, probably about 18 months ago, myself and Gemma and four other reps were elected by the parents to represent them within CDNT. So in other words, we would have brought their issues to the HSE and everything like that. Again, at the very start, we started looking at things and we were hearing things like it's very hard to get staff to come to Donegal and all that. So we started looking into things and we figured out, and I was on your show, you couldn't actually find the jobs.
Mm. So there was a big shortage too as well, wasn't there? We don't have the exact
figures. We were looking at 60-70% vacancy. You couldn't run a business.
And you couldn't find the applications. Even if you were interested, you would have to have rooted around to find that. So that was obviously a clear issue there.
That was a clear issue. And we, again, in fairness, we brought this to the minister and that, and things improved. And I have to say, Greg, we started having them meetings with the HSE and the politicians. Very good, constructive meetings, but there was clarity, Joe, there's kind of, and there was probably pressure put on the HSE to get things moving. And, you had HR there and everything, and things were moving. And in fairness, we're just chatting outside the studio. Staffing within CDNT now is going the right way.
And in fairness, special provisions were made to encourage staff and to fast track the appointments.
Yeah, the panels
were
cancelled for Donegal. Everything was, there was people sitting 8 and 9 months waiting for interviews. It was too long. They were going somewhere else. So everything speeded up. Everything, it's the way it should have been. And in fairness, like there for 2 years, we had no psychology in CDNT North. We now have two psychologists. We've got the school teams in there now for Little Angels and St. Bernard. A lot of good things is happening in that end. And probably by next March, we should be in a very good position. But that has been down to pressure from ourselves as parents reps and the politicians, you know, to get this out here. And in fairness, we have to say the management, managers within the areas have been very proactive with us. You're trying to get staff
in. Well, it made it their job probably easier to recruit. They don't want to sit with 60, 70% vacancies. They want staffing. So if you're a manager, if you're working this, firstly, if you're working, you want more colleagues to share the workload. Yeah. If you're a management, you want it to be easier to recruit because that shows that you're doing your job better. So that's all positive. Are the meetings ongoing, Gemma?
No.
What happened there?
Essentially, we would have last met with the HC management, with the Donegal Health Forum in June of this year. With the view that there would be another meeting in the next quarter. It came to about, what was it, about August, September time, and we had no date set for the meeting. So we wrote a letter to the Head of Service for Disabilities and to the Chief Officer for Donegal. And a couple of weeks ago, we got a reply back to say that they wouldn't be continuing those meetings because of organisational restructuring within the HSC. So the HSC community services are going from community health organisations to integrated health areas across the country. And they're saying because of this, there's a question over who would be in what roles. And as a result, they wouldn't be in a position to meet with us on an ongoing basis.
Right. So you find out who has the responsibility in this role and you make them available for meetings. They're not saying surely that they don't know who might actually be responsible.
Essentially, yeah, they are. They're saying that the recruitment process for that is ongoing and that posts will be changing. People will mm-hmm. be posts will be changing hands. So
was there any commitment to re-establish these meetings once they've actually established who might be responsible?
No.
But Greg, there is a point there too. Like, and Gemma works within the health service. Nothing else is stopping within HSE. Like, there's no other meetings stopping you. At the end of the day, it could actually be the same people going into these positions again. You know, we don't know that. But the fact that these changes aren't happening to, March or April next year, Jim, isn't it?
Yeah. I sat on a national board for the PDS roadmap as a parent rep. And I spoke to the head of disability services, the national head, that's a guy called Bernard O'Regan. And he assured me that there'd be nothing that's delayed, typically. So there would be nothing really happening until they don't foresee anything happening in that relation.
But you put the incumbent, you agree with them because it's such a serious issue. You put it to the incumbent to continue these meetings until such time as there's a smooth transition. If you're interested in having these meetings, I'm not being anti-HSC, but that's
they had given us that commitment initially. The very, very first meeting we had gone to with the HSC way back,
like when Sean
Doherty
left here, there was a show the next day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't say, well, we'll hopefully have a mid-morning show, maybe second quarter of whenever
2025. Yeah,
you know what I mean,
like. But like Greg, it's even within what you're saying there too, like we were seeing people that are retiring within the HSE in positions like, so every man their dog knows they're retiring, like, but they don't advertise that position 2 months after they leave. Like.
Right, so the great thing is staffing levels have improved, right?
In CDNT, yes.
In CDNT. So what, you're saying, both of you are saying this needs to be a really big big election issue, this area of care.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what are the gaps that remain?
Respite is an elephant in the room. Again, when we came in 18 months ago, Riverwalk, which Gemma can chat about, Riverwalk was closed nearly over 2 years at that stage.
That's Carndon, isn't it?
That's Carndon. Yeah. And there's a day centre there, but there's also an overnight respite. We're now at 4 years that's been closed. And we've been getting a lot of false dawns over the last 18 months. Like, we were told it was going to be March, we were told it was going to be May, we were told it was going to be September. Christmas. And there's always been an excuse, one perfect example. All they needed was a nurse. We were told there was going to be 11 interviewed for the nursing position. 11 being interviewed.
The panel had been created, yeah.
Yeah. So very confident that this was going to happen in May. And then there was an issue around whatever happened about recruitment. But there were still 10 other nurses, you'd say, in that panel. What happened?
So in other words, someone would have been given the job. They
couldn't
no
do
longer
it, whatever,
wanted the job.
You know, something happened,
but the 10 other candidates, you go back to the panel? You don't throw the panel in the bin. I just want to make it clear, Gemma, for there's many thousands listening that know exactly what respite is and the benefit of it, right? But I just want it to be explained one more time, because sometimes we use words, right? And when you are affected by it, you know exactly what it means and the ramifications. So the absence of respite in Carrindon, and then I'm sure we'll talk about Letterkenny problems at the moment too. What does that mean to a family? So what does it provide, and then what does it mean when it's not available?
So if it was working, it would provide overnight respite to families, so overnight care of an individual with high care needs, so that it's care, it's primary caregivers, so it's family, their family could get a break, could go out to something, could go to a wedding, could go to
do something with their other children, yeah.
Something as simple as a football match. In the absence of that, there is no break. Mm-hmm. So you're just constantly, and it is hard
there's
to look
no
after.
Break. Right. There's no break. So this means, you know, 7 days in 1 week, then the 4 weeks in that month, and then for the 12 months of that year, or Halloween, Christmas, whatever it might be, anniversaries, wedding, birthdays, it's constant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't care how strong an individual you are.
Exactly.
If you don't have a day that you can look to into the future, or if you don't have a moment whereby you're relieved of a little bit of responsibility, it's torturous.
Mm-hmm. You know, like Greg, there's like at our last family forum, we have family forum in every area, and I seen a couple in you, and I went over and I could just see in the mother's face, like, and sat down and got chatting to her, and their child wakes up at 3 o'clock every morning. That's him up, like, issues around behaviours, all that there. And this is a story we hear mm-hmm. hundreds of times.
And we're not, and this is the key thing about the word respite. That mum will have to do that 365 days a year. Yeah. It's the option maybe of, I don't know how many times in that year, four times, I don't know yeah. how many times, but it's the option whereby that mum and whoever else yeah. is in that has a bit of time to themselves.
But you know, Greg,
to enable them to continue, you know, doing it.
And it is only maybe a night or two here, but I tell you, families look forward. Do you know what, it's what keeps them hanging on, like. Mm-hmm. It's what keeps them families going. Them couple of nights, as Gemma said, that maybe do something with their other kids mm-hmm. or do something. And do you know what, it's just such an essential service.
So what's going on, Gemma? Are the staff not there? Is the money not there? Are the positions not there?
I wish I could tell you to go on, but every time we've asked what's going on, we're being told a different story. So initially it was that there were people in it. Essentially what happens is respite in Donegal, neither adults nor children have a full service. We have half a service, which means at best our respite service only works, is only operational for 26 weeks of the year mm-hmm. For children's disability services. So what is happening there is you will get it goes 1 week adult, 1 week children. And what might happen is that you would have an adult in placement there, and for whatever reason, their residential placement where they are normally will break down, and they will have to stay in that respite centre until such times as an appropriate placement mm-hmm. can be found for them in a residential setting. So then it's the children with disability looking for respite who suffer at that point in that regard. So as a response to what happens, initially we were told...
So you can
people,
be told you've respite next week,
and
right?
Cancel.
And they cancel it, say, look, at the care for another individual's broken down, yep. We're going to have to cancel that.
Exactly. So what's happened, but initially we were told there were people living in it for a prolonged period of time that couldn't find an appropriate placement. So there was 2 years taken up with that. Then there was the COVID pandemic. Then there was
recruitment embargo.
But there was also issues with, we were told that the place needed to be refurbished, that over the period of time that those individuals had lived there, that it was damaged, that flooring needed to be replaced with equipment and different things, just general wear and tear that needed to be fixed. We were told that was sorted. Then we were told that they didn't have a person in charge, which is a HICWA requirement for any sort of residential setting. We were told they'd hired the person in charge, and then we were told they had no staff nurses. And then we went to the next meeting, they were saying they had created a panel of 14 individuals. Then we were told there was an issue with one individual not being able to take the post, which begs the question, takes us back to where are the other 13?
But what it does is, I think when you're explaining you're losing, that to me talks of, and I'm not talking about an individual or individuals, that's poor management. You know, I'll go back to the analogy here in a private company or in your business, because, you know, say for instance you knew someone was retiring from your shop, Watson's, you would not wait for that person to retire, then scratch your backside for 6 months and then maybe advertise it, right? Yeah. So if you were told, or someone was going on maternity leave, as a business owner, right, you say, right, I'm going to be short on the floor here or behind the till. You, as a manager, you have to have someone in place for continuance. Why does that not happen in the HSE? In Letterkenny, it seems now, the service there is being interrupted because people are retiring. So what systems are in place? And we're told this, but it's gobbledygook. It's word salad. It doesn't mean anything. Reality is why is there a break in this service that is so important?
But Greg, our issue too, and it's a real crux of us, we know there's people on the panels looking to get these jobs. Like, there's, you know, we know
we're
there's
a
people.
Small community. I know what you're saying.
No, but I'm saying you know, there's people lying on panels for a year and a half.
I work in healthcare. I'm a nurse myself. Nurses talk to other nurses, and I know for a fact that there's people on waiting lists to get into the service.
So when you're told that, it feels like gaslighting, because you know, hold on a second, I actually literally know people that are eminently qualified and ready to go, and they're not being hired. So don't tell me that.
Mm-hmm. Like Gemma heard last
week. You're saying that to them, I'm not saying that to you.
Literally, I'm saying, well, I know there's people looking for these jobs.
You're like Gemma heard last week, within disabilities in Donegal,
I think there's about 20
vacancies for nursing positions, like, which are essential to the services.
But are they being actively recruited?
Well, not if there's people on a list for over a year.
Yeah.
How can you say that you're actively recruiting when people are sitting on a list for over a year?
Yeah, okay.
And you have vacant posts and no one's getting put into them. Mm. You know, it doesn't make any sense. As you say, if you were running a shop, you couldn't operate under that business model.
And those individuals have to be of a certain... They have to be of a certain qualification and what have you. It's not like I can apply. It's not me sitting on these lists. These are qualified people with the right criteria.
But Greg,
I'm going to
say something to you. See the people that go into work in respites, that they're... It's a career choice. They could go somewhere that maybe is an easier job. That these people are going into work with adults and children with challenge behaviours, like, you know, and it's a tough job. No, it's a fulfilling job for them. Like, cause, you know, you chat to these people and they love working in these centres. But even with Letterkenny, like, we'll go back to onto Letterkenny now. Like, somebody left in January, wasn't replaced. Somebody left in May, wasn't replaced. Somebody left in September, and now we've heard now through probably pressure, there's three nurses have been taken on. They will be probably in post now in 5 weeks' time. But where was, what? Go back to you, how could I run my business? That nurse in January should have been placed at that time. The nurse in May should have been placed at that time.
Yeah, it's just basic stuff.
And there's people on panels. Like, we know there's people on panels.
So do we have, not to broadcast right now, but certainly for my inquiries, do we have a list of vacancies at this point in the certain in disabilities or in CDNT? Is it easy to get that information?
Yes.
It is, right? Because I wouldn't mind getting that together so I can specifically ask the minister in relation to this and to ask why. And to ask, I want to know the relationship between a job vacancy and a panel. Yeah.
Like, Greg, I'm just going back to...
What is going on there? If you have a panel of, you said 10 remaining, I think you said 13, Gemma, 10 or 13, let's call the whole thing off 12, right?
Yeah.
Why are there vacancies whilst there's a panel there in situ? That's a very basic question.
$1 million question.
That should be very, very easy to answer. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want to be able to structure it in a way that the minister has to answer in a way that can't be convoluted.
Yeah. But Greg, why do we let it get... Like, at the end of the day, I had that meeting with the minister in June and the head of disabilities was there too. Like, there was an undertaking that Ballymacool would go to a 7-day service. Like, so they need to be staffed up to 7 days. At that stage, they probably didn't have staff for 5 days, where they were meant to be a 6-day service.
Yeah.
Also at that meeting...
That's a 3-day service now, is it?
No, Ballymacool now is a 6-day service.
It is
on paper, a 6-day service. When they get these staff back in, it probably will be up to a 6-day service.
And you've been told that's in...
But I was told in June that would go to a 7-day service and you start recruiting straight away. Like, that was the words was used in the room. On Riverwalk, we brought up about Riverwalk, and the minister turned around and she says, get the service open. Even if it's only part-time, open. And she was right. Like, once the doors is open, Greg, then...
Yes, but there has to be... especially given the topic that we were talking about and the fact that arguably parents could be hanging on, caregivers could be hanging on the minister's words... We don't need ministers necessarily agreeing with us and saying what should be done. What we need is ministers saying how it's going to be done, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't need ministers for observation. We can do the observing, and I have a lot of respect for that minister, I should say, but we need to see this actioned on the ground. A caller says, we have nursing services as part of our care package. They say nursing recruitment was down to an embargo. While the embargo is lifted, we've been told on Friday that Donegal Primary Care is about above their allowed quota, and that's for every primary care, and that is the reason we've no more nursing staff. Yet we know nurses sitting on panels, some for 11 months waiting on a position to become available. Hi, Leonard. Have you reached out to Minister Charlie McConnell for help in relation to this? So in other words, before going public?
We have, yeah.
And what was Greg, the Minister's office's response?
Greg, I may tell you, we have spoke to all... this is above politics for us.
Every single politician that's been elected in the county of Donegal.
And what's the response has been?
They're all with us. They're all with us. They're all pushing for this to get back open. They feel that things were moving well when we were working together collaboratively.
Why does it take us chatting on the radio, though, often to get stuff done, though? If everyone's working for yous, all different politicians, right? Like, do we really think if we hadn't talked about CDNT last year...
Can I be completely honest with you? I think it's because, and I would have been guilty of this myself... nobody knows what it's like to have a child with a disability until you have a child with a disability.
Yeah.
And I think we're all very guilty of looking at things in the paper, looking at headlines, looking at things coming on the news and thinking, God, that's awful. And the next day you turn the page and you move on to something new because it doesn't affect you personally.
A bit like the hospital, isn't it? Unless you're, like hospital, just
unless you're
there,
sitting in A&E waiting for 24 hours to be seen, you don't, it doesn't get explored.
And fairness to the politicians too, they liked that form of the meeting because they said it's okay for them to bring someone up, but then you have family people there chatting about real family issues like and telling stories. Like he says, it's very hard to ignore it or move on. Like, you know, but like Greg, there's another figure too. Like at the moment, like 3 year waiting list for respite in Donegal. Like 3 years. Like, so if you're in a crisis now,
can I 3 years? Yeah, but like 3 years respite waiting list means there's no respite in my
absolutely
view.
No.
Like I don't mean it. I don't mean it funny. But unless you've got a date within 3-6 months, there's no respite. So there's no respite.
Yeah.
Okay, because a 3 year wait list, God knows what could be happening.
Yeah.
The carer could be dead from the stress of this.
You there's issues.
I don't want to be harsh, but
be dramatic about it either, but I really think that we're on the cusp of some sort of massive tragedy like that.
Yeah.
Where somebody is going to do, and we are in the position where we can prevent that now.
Yeah.
It's incredible pressure on parents, and parents do their absolute best. But I know of cases where they are so far gone that they've had to have two slick care for the children for a day or two. Mm-hmm.
And that's damning on us as a society.
Not
Greta.
As a choice.
No.
But they are so far gone that the only way that they think that they can get back, get themselves any way back to do it, is that Tusla have had to take the child or children.
So there's a bit of like internal HSE. Absolutely none. Respite services are managed by disability services. And CDNT, which is Children's Disability Services, is like a separate entity on its own, looking after like the clinical side or the speech and language, the OT, the physio, all that sort of input. There seems to be some sort of overlap and there seems to be a crack in the middle where children's respite has gone through the wayside because it doesn't fall under the budget for CDNT, but children's disabilities doesn't fall under the budget for disabilities. So it seems to be there's kind of like a crack there where we're all sitting and children's respite services is not getting the attention. We're not getting the priority. We need a standalone children's respite service in Donegal.
You talked of a restructuring within HSC. Yes. Is there any indication that it would be clear under which office or department?
To be honest with you, from my understanding, like Greg, it's fairly limited now, I must say. But from talking to people that I've spoken to about it, so the national people that I sit with on that panel, it seems to be that they're just like we're coming in line with the hospital grips. So at the minute, CHO1 comprises of Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan, Sligo and Leitrim. And what they're going to do is we're going to lose Cavan and Monaghan and we're going to come into much the same as what the Celtic grip is that ticks in the hospital. And that's what it's bringing it in line with. So you're really only talking about, in
moving
my view,
deck chairs around.
Yeah, yeah, moving deck chairs. It doesn't seem to be a huge issue.
Okay, so I wanted to ask one other question. What was it in relation to? It was kind of a definitive question. It'll come back to me in a second. But at the moment, we need to get answers. We need to put those answers to the minister and questions to the minister and get those answers. The question I was going to ask, sorry, is this a Donegal problem? Are there issues in Dublin City with respite for children? Are there issues in Galway or Tipperary?
I'm sure there's definitely issues within children's disability services nationwide. There are 100% is. Mm. I think in relation to respite, if you look at any other county, respite provision services for children are generally run by private companies.
Yeah.
So like St John of God or Brothers of Charity, funded by the HSC, but run.
But why don't we have, this is the exact same with home care packages.
That's our question.
We don't, there's no waiting for a home care package in Dublin because they avail of private services. And even now, part of the solution to the CDNT issue was let's look at the private area.
Yeah.
Why is that? It must be a local HSE management.
In that meeting, I said, if we cannot get this service up and running in Carindona, can we not go down the private route?
Yeah.
And even I brought up the issue around a children's only standalone respite. And the minister actually says, we should probably look at the private route.
That again,
no, but I'm just saying, Greg, she's right.
Know,
it would take us 10, 12 years.
But we need the minister to make it
for
happen.
But if we were to wait for the HSE, it would take 12 years. If you get a private
there has
company,
to be
at the end
in
of the day, half a service isn't good enough for either side, adults or children. You know, and half a service is not acceptable.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous that it's being shared, but it needs to be. It needs to be segregated and separated
but
now.
It's clear,
and it's always going to be in that, it's always going to be the children that need the respite.
Always going to be the probability that older people might need prolonged care because they maybe don't naturally have caregivers in the house. Yeah. So you can't share those services. Listen, we've a lot to chew on there.
Yeah.
The consensus amongst you, and I'm sure all families, is this needs to be an election issue. We need to start taking interest in elections that in issues that don't directly affect us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because they might not directly affect us, but your neighbour, it affects them. And or I guess it affects that woman that comes into the shop at 8:30 every morning looking like she hasn't slept for a week.
Yeah. Because she probably hasn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we need to advocate for those people as well.
Yeah. And I think we're calling for all parents of all children anywhere to stand with us on this. You know, much like if we were standing protesting about something in relation to the children's ward in Letterkenny, this affects all kids. It affects children who don't have disabilities. It affects the siblings of these children. It affects the family. And it affects the children themselves. Respite isn't just for the parents. It isn't just for the caregivers. Respite is also for the person in receipt of respite.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Because it's as important for them to get a break from that tense environment as it is for the person given the care. And these children are being failed.
And listen, if it comes down to a financial issue, let's put it like this. The state has saved billions per year through this type of care.
Yeah.
And all parents are asking for is a bit of a break, respite. Okay, I want to drag some of those figures together, Leonard. We can do it off air because I want to invite the minister on and I want to put some of these questions directly to them, and I hope we can. Either way, we'll get a written response, if not a verbal response. But Gemma McGrory-Fitzgerald, thank you very much indeed. Leonard Watson, thank you very much indeed. Both CDNT family representatives. And if you're affected by that story, please get in touch with us as well. You heard from Gemma, the stark reality is that some people just really are I don't even want to use that phrase, but are struggling greatly. And we don't want to see, if it hasn't happened already, we don't want to see a tragedy or whatever.
Just before we go on that, Greg, just to finish off, I know of a case where there's a person in my own area in a show looking for respite for a long, long time, and the HC came back to them and offered them an overnight respite in Donegal Town. If you live in North Inishowen, it's 2.5 hours in a car with somebody who's in crisis to Donegal Town, 2.5 hours back, and you'd have to be up in the morning at 10 o'clock to collect them again, 2.5 hours there and 2.5 hours back. That's not respite. So what we want from the HSC is not a tokenistic response to people on these waiting lists, not a tokenistic response to families of children in crisis. We want a real solution, a long-term solution that's going to help families in their own communities long-term. Yeah,
they need to look at a map, of course. And I don't mean that in any way humorous or facetious, because that could go down as family refused respite.
It will go down as family refused respite.
So, okay. Gemma, thank you very much. Leonard, thank you.
Thank you.
Donegal Deputy Pádraig McLaughlin, who is Sinn Féin's Chief Whip. Pádraig, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, of course, Sinn Féin finds itself in another unfortunate situation, having to explain how it's dealing with really quite important issues and its procedures and what have you. A difficult time for the party, would you agree?
Yeah, it is. I mean, listen, I was listening to Leonard and Gemma, and I'm all too aware of the challenges. I deal with parents of children with special needs all across Donegal, respite, lack of supports, the assessments of needs. We have the longest waiting list in the country. They're the issues that matter to the people of Donegal. But whenever a complaint in any organisation lands on your desk without fear or favour, you have to investigate it and you have to deal with the matter that's before you.
Deputy Brian Stanley, one of the key figures within Sinn Féin, he resigned from the party. He's also going to be removed from his role as chair of the Public Accounts Committee following his resignation, as I say, from Sinn Féin at the weekend. And he, left with both barrels blazing, really, as it relates to Sinn Féin and the procedures. I suppose people are very interested in the timeline, Pádraig. When was a complaint made about Deputy Stanley and what was the process thereafter?
Yeah, so my understanding is that a member of our party, a long-standing member, made a complaint in early August. And that complaint was put to Brian Stanley. He's obviously a TD, Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, but you cannot ignore what was regarded as a serious complaint.
Do you know the nature of that complaint?
No, and I think it's important.
I don't understand that, though, because I heard Deputy McDonald also say that she didn't. Like, I would never question your integrity or honesty, Pádraig, but I can believe, because you'll say it right, I can't believe you don't know this complaint, what this complaint is against him.
Well, I mean, what I can tell you is in the last 24 hours, Mary Lou McDonald obviously had to be made aware as party president because Brian had resigned from the party. But people have rights.
So Mary Lou McDonald does know the nature of the complaint against him?
She does at this stage, yes.
Okay,
yes.
She knew 24 hours ago.
And, you know, whenever a complaint, and you'll know this, if it was Highland Radio or a GAA club, people have rights. Mm-hmm. So you don't go telling the whole club that this complaint has been made. There is an independent procedure. You have to be fair to all parties. You're innocent until proven guilty. So that's what happened in this case. Is a panel was established, a disciplinary committee. They examined the matter. They spoke to the complainants. They spoke to Brian Stanley, who the complaint was made against. He then, later on in the stage, made a counter allegation, and both are serious matters. And, you know, you just have to go through this.
But you see, like, I know that you're sort of making a virtue of the process of what Sinn Féin did, but surely if these were serious matters, you know, we've got the courts, we've got the DPP, we've got the Gardaí. There isn't sort of like, you know, the SFP that sort of determines whether a complaint meets sort of a criminal threshold to go to the Gardaí. Surely, in hindsight, as you've said, as outlined, these were serious allegations. It's at that point that you refer them to An Gada Síochána, because otherwise it sounds like you're trying to sort it out within the party.
No. The disciplinary committee decided, in terms of the original complaint, that it wasn't one of a criminal nature. The person who made the complaint had not brought the matter to the Gardaí. It was not of a criminal nature, but it was serious enough to warrant an investigation. You have to be fair to all parties. And as the investigation continued, then a counter allegation was made by Deputy Stanley, and you know, he whenever he appeared before the independent panel, as is his right, he had a solicitor, a barrister present with him. He took the matter seriously, but when he resigned from the party, the head of the disciplinary committee, obviously, you know, he's resigned. This process cannot continue. He was to respond by today. It was a preliminary findings. Both parties were made aware of it, had 7 days to respond to the draft findings. And rather than respond to them, he resigned. So the head of the disciplinary committee had a call to make. And the word that has been used, and I think it's a good word, an abundance of caution. Mm-hmm. The matter was passed to An Gada Síochána.
But surely, if we were going to use the phrase of an abundance of caution, the abundance of caution then, because you and Mary Lou McDonald have said it's neither your job to determine sort of the criminal threshold, right? The abundance of caution surely is as soon as these complaints are made, not now when he resigns, because that sounds like his resignation has interrupted an internal party process. But surely that, at that time, and I don't know the nature of these allegations, you notify the Gardaí in the abundance of caution, and if there's a process ongoing within the party, you continue that. You're not a subservient of the judiciary or the courts or the guards. That phrase can only be used if it was actually used in an appropriate time, not when the horse bolted.
Well, what I would say to you is that anybody listening today who's in an organisation, a significantly sized organisation, be it a football club, be it a business, or be it a public, institution, you know, you have to deal with complaints. And, you know, often you have a complaint that is of serious nature, but it's not a criminal complaint. And you have procedures to deal with that. And that was the decision made at the start of this process. But
so what changed then that made it a potential criminal complaint?
Well, there was a counter allegation made.
When was that made?
Very late in the process, like as I understand, in late September.
This weekend? So, well, that's two or three weeks ago.
Well, to answer your question, my understanding, a counter allegation was made in late September. So whenever this was then, obviously with Brian Stanley resigning, brought to the attention of the party president, you look at where it's at, you take another legal eye on the matter, and a decision was made, listen, we can't conclude this process, we can't make findings, so let's just give the file to An Gada Síochána and let them decide if there's any matter where you have to make findings. So I think that's only fair to all parties, considering.
Yeah, but even to how the party more recently, and it's been featured last week, of course, dealt with dealt with allegations of allegations relating to incitement of children, not incitement, but to attempts to meet children and what have you, subsequent convictions in that regard. And then two people, I can't understand how anyone would give a character reference for someone facing such charges, how that happened and how that unfolded and the timeline of it and what triggered action from Sinn Féin. Again, those questions still feel a little bit unanswered to me as well, Deputy. And it does, particularly for your detractors, it does sound like the party sometimes is a law unto itself, and that there things only get addressed when they come out into the open.
Well, actually, it's the opposite. I mean, whenever the issue of Michael McMonagall was brought to the party's attention, he was immediately suspended from the party. The difficulty is here that you then discover later on that two colleagues, work colleagues, and as you say, I will never, ever be able to understand why thought it was acceptable in any way for them personally to give references. Now, they didn't consult with anybody else in Sinn Féin. They gave references for a work colleague. Absolutely unacceptable. They would have been sacked had they not resigned. So there's accountability. There's immediate investigation in our party. In terms of Deputy Brian Stanley, even though he was a senior member of our party, chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, a complaint was made, and the person who made complaint was treated exactly the same as Brian. Mm. They were treated equally and fairly. Due process was followed. Brian had his solicitor, his barrister present. You know, these are things, you know yourself, Greg, in any organisation, you want to be doing what you're doing. In your case, dealing with the news, dealing with the important issues of Donegal, a football club playing football, political party.
But just in relation
to... It's not what you want to deal with, but you have to deal with it.
Of course, I get that. But at the same time, when you're explaining you're losing, and that's the difficulty for any party that's facing something of a controversy, we had... the miscommunications or whatever you want to describe it of Sinn Féin as it relates to the referenda, also flip-flopping, as some would see, on immigration. I'm sure you'd see it as different, but I think the parties conceded there was communication issues. We have this issue now with the character reference being given and now scrutiny over this. This is as the party has dramatically fallen in the polls, and we know the only important poll is the poll on the day, okay? But does there come a point, even if you think that Mary Lou McDonald is an exceptional person and the right person to lead Sinn Féin, does there come a point, do you think, and are we anywhere near that point, where you have to say for the good of the party if there needs to be a reset?
No. I watched Mary Lou McDonald last Tuesday, and she went on to News Talk with an interview with Pat Kenny, one of the most prominent and most tough interviewers in the country. And I think that she showed all of her qualities as a human being, proper leadership, dealing with the issues that our party is facing. By the way, these are issues where you have human beings, unacceptable human error, but she stepped up. She went into the Dáil, she did the same. She went on RT 61 News. Yesterday I was in Sligo. She addressed a meeting of Sinn Féin members in the west of Ireland. Again, strong leadership, clear leadership, not hiding away. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think people want to know that every organisation faces a challenge. Human beings mess up. They do things that are crazy, unacceptable. Is there accountability? Do people lose their jobs? That's one of the big issues we have with this country, is nobody ever seems to be held accountable, no matter what goes wrong. In our party, they are. People lose their jobs, lose their positions, and they're properly investigated. So I think, in fairness to Mary Lou, even though these are horrible issues to deal with, she has showed leadership again and again.
And just finally, and this is the thing I'm more focused on, though I don't know the full allegations really, is the protection of children. Are there proper systems in place for the protection of children, i.e. when someone is facing such serious allegations as Mr. McMonagall was, surely there's something within the party, a diktat that goes out to ensure that people can't send character references on their behalf. I don't know if you bring the ISPCA in or whoever it might be. Are the procedures in place for the protection of children? And if so, did they fail that two people thought it was okay to give at that time an accused but now a convicted person character references? Because that's a thing that I'd be very concerned about.
Yes, there are very strong child protection protocols in our party. But the thing for the life of me we can't understand is why these two former colleagues of Michael McMonagall on a personal level thought it would be acceptable in any way to give references. And obviously they would have been sacked had they not resigned. So the issue for us, and Mary Lou has opened up this, is a corporate governance review of our party with independent advisors coming in, making sure that throughout our party that there is no doubt, shape or form. And these are challenges for every organization. Listen, Greg, you know, our party reflects our communities. You know, we're good, decent people. We're horrified at the thought that any child could be put under. Okay. And we're horrified that anybody does not meet their responsibilities. And we're going to deal with this and deal with it very strongly.
And I appreciate you coming on and talking about it too. It's important. And thank you very much for that. It would have been easy to say, it'd be easy to say you were at a meeting or something. So I appreciate you coming on and answering those questions. That is Sinn Féin party whip, Chief Whip, in fact, Deputy Padraig McLaughlin.